Welcome to the Spud Spotlight podcast series, where we shine a light on the heart of our community. Each episode, we celebrate the stories, journeys, and voices of Spuds from the past, present, and future. From alumni making waves in the world, to students building their paths, to the people shaping what's next. This is where we honor what it means to be a part of Spud Nation. In this kickoff episode, we sit down with two of our own, Mr. Brian Cole, who's an orchestra teacher and coach at Horizon East, and Mr. Chris Musselman, who's the athletic performance coach for both Horizon East and Morehead High School. Together, they give us a preview of their upcoming keynote for the Horizon Activity Showcase and dig into the habits, mindsets, and behaviors that fuel student success in the classroom, on the field, and beyond. Enjoy.
The idea here with the Spud Spotlight is to begin celebrating our community, past, present, and future, with community members, teachers, staff, students, coaches, individuals who are making a difference. Today I've got Coach Chris Musselman with me here and Mr. Brian Cole. I appreciate you guys coming in. This is number one of our Spud Spotlight podcast interview session. I'm going to work to get these posted on a podcast platform, but ultimately what we're trying to accomplish here, celebrate what's going on in the Spud community and continue to just kind of open the eyes of our community and all the good things happening with Horizon Activities. Yeah. So let's start with just getting to know who you guys are a little bit. I want you to talk about your professional title and your self-identified purpose as it relates to working in education. I'll start with you, Coach Musselman.
Well, my title is Senior High School Strength Conditioning Coach with Sanford Sports Performance. Obviously, that's like underneath the umbrella of Sanford Health. I would think like my purpose really is to create a culture of athletic development within our community that exists at the Horizon campus as well as the Morehead High School campus. And just be a person that kids look to say, hey, you know what? I know the habits and behaviors that are going to be important in this classroom. In order for me to be successful, I know he's going to lead me to those and he's going to help me not only by modeling those and facilitating those, but he's also going to help me find my own way to self-affirmation and feeling good about myself. So taking the platform of athletic development, but making it more about somebody's life habits that are going to lead them to success and happiness is pretty much what I'm focused on about being here.
How long have you been doing, talk about how long you've been in Morehead.
Okay.
And then how long you've been doing this work?
This is going to be my fourth, my fourth year here at Morehead. This is my third high school. I opened two high schools in the state of Arizona. One was Poston Butte High School. I was there 7 years. Then I opened another high school, Castile High School, in a different school district, in a different city, but real close to the same proximity. And I was also there 7 years. So now I'm basically going on, I guess, my 18th year in public education. Even though I'm technically not a teacher, I do look at myself as an educator.
Got it. Long time. Coach Cole?
Started teaching here in 1995, so I think this is like year 30, year 31.
Let's go, all right.
Middle school orchestra teacher, 5th through 8th grade. Somebody once said, you know, oh, you teach the violin. But I often think of this, you know, violin can't learn. It's the kid that can learn. And I think of that when I coach as well, is that it's the kid behind the helmet, it's the kid behind the instrument that I'm really working towards, so.
Violin can't learn. Do you know who said that?
Maybe Pablo Casals.
Can you talk a little bit about, so to give a little bit of background, my mom was a teacher, so teaching for me, I went to school initially as a bio degree, explored the pre-med route, that lasted about a semester. It just wasn't a fit. I knew teaching was what I wanted to do, so I just made the switch. How did you get in the realm of public education? Like, was this what you always wanted to do? Did you have someone push you this direction?
Teaching was, like, my dad was a teacher in Marshall, Minnesota, so I always grew up in a teacher family. I went to school to get an ed degree. In the back of my mind, I kind of had a few ideas of other things I might want to try. But when I was in grad school, a high school orchestra teacher hurt his back and they said, hey, Brian, can you come and fill in? I'm like, I don't think this is for me. And after about a week, I knew that this is probably what I want to do for the rest of my life. And so that's kind of how I ended up being a teacher.
Was that in Morehead?
No, it was in Sioux Falls.
Okay. Yeah. Will you coach?
Gosh, you know, this is literally my third career. I met my wife in the restaurant industry. We were 22, 23. And at that time it was, hey, I'm a food server, I'm a bartender. I went into an MIT program and became assistant manager to a general manager. I worked for three different concepts all the way up to managing partner, area supervisor. So that was like the first 15 years of my life and starting to raise kids. During that time, I learned a lot about business in general, and I took some of that into creating my own business. And so I ran my own business for some of my own business crossovered into public education, actually, too, in my infancy stage of public education. But I ran a landscape business. We did landscape installation, landscape maintenance. We actually, after the housing crisis came up in 2007, we expanded into home watch services. So many of my snowbird second homes people that we, customers that were in Arizona, a lot of them from North Dakota. So we had people from Canada, North Dakota, Minnesota. We had a bunch of, hey, people that get away in their winters that came to Arizona. So that was kind of my first having a few customers that were actually farmers and talking to them about this region, but never in a million years ever thinking I was going to end up here. After I was in business, I met Spencer Stowers through football. We coached against each other a couple different times at a couple different schools. We knew the same principal at one of his jobs. The principal said, Coach, I need to get you in front of kids. I want you to get your CTE license, and I want you to teach business for me, which ended up being business and health. Even though I'm not a certified teacher, I ended up teaching health for 2 years. It got me into public education. I realized the habits and behaviors that I was teaching to kids were very similar to what I use with my own five kids. And I liked teaching. I liked seeing kids be self-affirmed, getting confident, and then displaying those habits and behaviors and seeing that, hey, if I do these things, I can be successful. But I realized that I wanted to align my passions with that type of work. And I'd always been in strength and conditioning for pretty much almost all my life, off and on, but never professionally. And I said, you know, I'm just going to go into this realm and create from all my life experiences have kind of accumulated and put me to a position where it's like, hey, I've gained all these things and all these experiences. And now I'm putting it all together to say, you know what? This is where I'm meant to be. So it's a long time coming, but it was a roundabout way because everybody I meet in education is very similar to Mr. Cole. Yeah, it's like, yeah. Hey, I went to school. I was going to be a teacher. I knew friends that were teachers. That is not how I've ended up here. But I think some of the things that I can contribute to kids are outside of the normal public education norms, because I think some of my viewpoints and some of the things that I believe in are more business, personal related before it's straight public education related. Right. But I've known to kind of take some of those and put it into public education so that I know how to kind of navigate this world. Yeah. But I love it. But it's literally my third career.
I'm going to circle back to the management, you know, starting your business, being an entrepreneur, and that experience, because I think there's value in that mindset for kids, because I think what we're ultimately trying to do through teaching them is set them up to thrive in whatever they choose to do. You guys are here as our first guest for a specific reason, because I've talked with both of you at length about what it is that you teach or what you coach, right? I think the cool part about my conversations with both of you is that you teach different things, orchestra, athletic performance, but both of you have identified that what I'm really teaching are habits, behaviors, and things that set kids up for success. So what I want you to speak to is, what is it that you're trying to teach? Obviously, orchestra is the surface level, but when kids exit, on top of knowing what they need to for orchestra, what is it you hope that they exit your classroom or the weight room with?
I probably think this at least once a day, you know, life lessons through orchestra. Or when I'm coaching, life lessons through track or cross country, football, whatever. Yeah. I've been teaching 30 years. I probably have 4,000 or 5,000 kids in my classroom or out there. How many of them are professional athletes? Very few. How many are professional musicians? Maybe one or two out of the thousands I've had in my class. So I think early on I realized, I'm glad they can play a D scale and tune. I'm glad they have a good bow hold, but it's really about pursuing the excellence and the determination it takes to, you know, I've got a goal. I'm gonna try to become a fine fiddle player or a fine runner or whatever. Yep. But that can translate to other areas of your life. Excellence becomes a habit. And And that's why little things like having your feet flat on the floor, yeah, or you know, getting your back straight, your head up. I don't care what line of work you're in, you're going to have to be disciplined to do something consistently. And yeah, I think that's what it is. It comes back to, what are the skills that the students are going to need for the rest of their life?
Yeah. I'm going to circle back to something you said, but I'll let you go next in terms of what it is kids are leaving the weight room with, on top of obviously hopefully improved athletic performance.
You know, using something that they're passionate about. They're passionate about excelling in sport. In this case, they might be passionate about excelling playing a specific instrument, musical instrument. Knowing that these are their passions, we kind of already have them hooked.
Right.
To then say, okay, now if I can earn your trust and respect and align your trust and respect of me with your passions, I can probably dictate a little bit about what actions are going to follow, right, and what outcomes are going to come from that. So for me, I approach our kids in our class the same way I approach raising my five kids. My five kids, they're 24 to 35 now, so they're all adults, they're all married. I've got grandkids as well. I always raise them with the mindset that I know you're 7 and I want you to be happy and I want you to be a successful 7-year-old, but when you're 19 to 70, I'm going to have very little impact on, right, your daily life, yeah, and I can't, right, control anything.
Right.
So I have to create habits and behaviors within you that you know that you can translate into any life endeavors that you so choose, whatever your passions are. So the way I go about the classroom is the same way. Yes, we kind of have them hooked the same way because we have their passion there in front of us. And so now we can utilize, you want to participate in this passion and you want to reach a high level of success in your passion, then there are some habits and behaviors that are going to be necessary for you to model on a daily basis and consistently in order to have some of those things manifest.
That's right.
So I really just focus on creating a platform that kids can come into, that it's consistent, their expectations are very clear. I got to not only model them, but I got to adhere. I got to make sure that every day they're adhering to those expectations and modeling those things. So they know there's never like a, hey, today it's going to be Millie Mally. We're going to come in. We're going to do this. No, it's the same way every day.
Yeah.
Some people might say it's a mundane process, but here's what it really does. They come in and kids know what to expect within a given reason. Like the process itself, the system itself doesn't change, but what we might be doing would be changing. But what it does is when kids walk in the room and they're void of anxiety because they have an expectation. Now all they want to do is they want to show everyone in the room that they're capable. They want to make themselves feel capable. They don't want to make a poor decision. They don't want to do anything wrong. Right. If they believe in what's in front of them and it's consistent every day and they don't have to guess, what are we doing today? You'd be surprised how comfortable they get and how much self-affirmation and self-confidence comes from that. So I'm literally just trying to help, not that anybody asked me to, and not that it's necessary. I'm trying to help our community help raise their kids. You know, sure, they say it takes a village.
Right.
I just think I'm somebody in the village trying to help us, you know, get some great kids to the next level.
And I think that's why we're in education. That's what we all do, right? That's kind of what we're all attempting to do, is work together to help students achieve their potential and do what they ultimately would like to, have the ability to do what they'd like. So you talked about feet on the floor, and I'll tell you that my favorite thing about your concerts and your classroom, and I observed you both, and my favorite thing is the same, which is, again, why you're here together. The music is great. The product, the outcome is awesome. But what I like even better is your feet are on the floor. When it's time to, you know, when you step up on the podium, your instrument goes a specific way. When you're holding your bow, I referenced last year during one of your conferences, your kids look like robots during parts of the song because they're so in tune and so habitually acclimated to the idea of what they're supposed to be doing. How do you teach that? How do you get to the level of, when I step here, your feet are here. When I'm here, your instrument looks like this. And why does it matter? How do you teach that and why does it matter? And for you, the question would be similar, and kids know that they start with their left.
Mm-hmm.
Kids know what direction that they're going to face.
Sure.
Kids know the tempo and the pacing. Mm. How do you teach it?
I remember years ago in an education class, teacher passed out blank checks. They were fake blank checks. And he said, now make it out to yourself for $1 million. Then I'm going to explain to you how to write my signature so you can copy my signature. Probably 10 minutes, he said, now put your pencil here and come down at a little angle and I'll move about a half inch this way. And like, we were all like, we have no idea. Then he went to the chalkboard, grabbed a piece of chalk, and he drew it up on the wall. And we're like, oh. And we saw him do it. In probably 5 seconds, we were able to model what he had been trying to talk to us about. Kids, you know, I often think, you know, teach at all times, use words when necessary, yeah. right? Teach at all times, use words when necessary. And so I want kids to see I take my job seriously.
Right.
At the end of the day, I'm a middle school orchestra teacher. On the pecking order of, you know, teachers and whatnot, it's not that big of a deal. Yeah. But I let them know when I'm in front of you, this is the most important thing of my day. You know, be where your feet are. Right now, I'm in front of sixth grade orchestra, and this is the most important thing I get to do all day. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not. I get to be with my wife and my kids. But when I'm in front of you, I act as if this were the most important thing. And, you know, discipline in what they do. I was talking to a former student who has a gym in town the other day, and he said, you know, if you do these six things, you know, if you show up consistently, if you get good sleep, if you're going to see results. Mm-hmm. And I say that to my students all the time. If you have your feet flat on the floor, if you have a good bow hold, if you have your fiddle on the shoulder, if you do what, ultimately it comes down to this. Do you have a good attitude and you work hard? Do you have a good attitude and you work hard? Those two things, you're going to be successful, not just in my classroom, not just out on the track, but you'll be successful at anything in life yeah. if you work hard with a good attitude. And so I often think my vehicle happens to be orchestra. Yep. If you showed up at my door tomorrow and say, hey, Cole, we don't have orchestra anymore, you're going to be doing Chinese. Well, I'd have to read a few books on how to teach Chinese, but my classroom is going to look exactly the same. Yeah, like your chairs are going to be here and you're going to have, I don't know. It all comes down to consistency. And like, I loved what you said, the anxiety. When they know they come in and 2 minutes after the bell, they have to be tuned, look on the board. Yeah. They know what to expect. And so,
And anything to add, like it's the same. And again, that's why you guys are here together is, I've observed you both. I've been in both your classrooms. I've seen you both at work. And the cool part for me is your different avenues, but it's the same thing. It's consistency, it's habit, it's routine, it's knowing what to expect. Anything to add to that?
So I go back to once we earn the trust and respect of the kids that are in front of us, we create a structure that is void of anxiety. Now there's challenges there and anxiety might present itself, but in terms of your daily structure, they know what to expect. I think once they do that and they start to see that if I just follow the directions of what everybody's in here doing, then some results and self-affirmation start manifesting, and then that becomes empowering and the confidence kicks in and they start creating their own goals. Day one, it's my goals for them. Mm-hmm. They don't come in with goals generally. But as we go on, I'm continually encouraging them and then teaching them how to create goals for themselves. And then the whole process becomes about their goals for themselves, not just my goals for them. Even though they're interconnected, it becomes more about them in every capacity. I just think the more that you can be extremely consistent in the structure that you provide, the more that you give kids like the opportunity to blossom. We have a rule in, we have a saying in the weight room where in day one orientation, we go through like what we're trying to accomplish and the roles for everyone. My role, the other teachers in the room roles or coaches, the kids' roles, the administration, everyone's roles in this process and what we're trying to accomplish with and through them. In that, I say there's a slide that we say, we don't have rules, we have standards. Yep. And so kids come in and they know like, if you tell them it's a rule, you gotta put it on the board because they gotta memorize the rules. Yep. But if it's a standard, it's a given that this is the minimum expectation of what we do. And this is how we all come together and create a culture of standards. Yep. And once we have those standards in place, now we can start creating values. So there's a lot of things in here where I use the platform of athletic development, where in reality, I'm trying to just create a platform for them to understand they can do this on their own, whether it's in English, whether it's in orchestra, whether it's in business, whether it's in being the best husband, wife, father, mother, whatever it may be. You're all going to use the same habits and behaviors to get those things done.
Right. One thing I say to my students often is, my goal is to work myself out of a job. Yeah. I don't want you to come back 5 years saying, what are the notes on my D? I'm like, you know that. You don't need me anymore. Right. So I want them to become their own best teacher.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
Coach Cole, I want to circle back to something that you talked about in modeling. Specifically, I think what I want to hear from you two is what habits or what systems do you have in place that allow you to do your job specifically at a high level?
It's a couple of things. I mean, first of all, there are so many great teachers, leaders out there. I want to tap into what they're doing, whether listening to podcasts or YouTube videos or observing other people. Someone told me years ago, you know, if you want to be a leader in whatever field you're in, make sure you're a reader. If you want to be a leader, be a reader. And so many books, some books I come back to every August, you know, there's a book called Teach Like Your Hair is on Fire. I probably read it 7 or 8 times, but every time I read it in the fall, it kind of gets me ready for the start of the school year. Years ago, I mean, in my classroom, you have your yearly goals, maybe your life goals, but I often tell the students, you know, goals are dreams with deadlines. And if you shoot for nothing, you're going to hit it every time.
Yeah.
If you shoot for nothing, you're going to hit it every time. And I want them to know that I have things that I'm going to shoot for by the end of first hour, by the end of second hour. And those goals might change within the period, but that's what drives me. And that's what I want to drive them as students and musicians and athletes. And I always want to know where I'm not always going to get there at the end of every day or end of period, but it's the motion aspect of being consistent and going for something. So, but I can't say enough about like finding teachers, finding authors that resonate with you, you know. And sometimes people say, you got to read this book, Cole, and I read it and it does nothing for me.
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, Chinese buffet. You're like, got to try this. Well, that didn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
So there are those authors, you know, whether it's Ryan Holiday or others, where you're like, anything they read is golden in my mind. So I'm going to go back to that well, and I'm going to get fed time and time again.
Yeah. I've appreciated being able to talk about books and past here between, mm-hmm. you know, you, myself, Coach Dewar is a great resource for books. And then finding a coach, someone you can tap into. Coach Musselman, I've taken a lot of the things that you have ingrained as habits for yourself, bedtimes, nutrition type stuff. Talk about things that you have in place that allow you to do your job at a high level.
First and foremost, every day we realize all eyes are on us and we have to model certain things.
Yep. Mm.
If we aren't willing to grow, I can't expect a kid to be willing to grow.
Sure.
If we aren't willing to model the things that we're asking of them, I can't expect them to do them. So I'm constantly aware of, I'm going to be on time. I'm going to be prepared. They're never going to see me behind. I'm going to be the same level of interaction as often as I can be. And as consistently as I can be all the time, because those are the things that I'm going to ask of them when they're working in the room, the same work rate, the same productivity, the way things, like you mentioned before, benches have to be faced, things have to be done in order. They always have to be plugged in. And I think if I don't model that, then there's no way that they're going to be willing to do that as well. So I think, like, I think I've told you this before, there's only two reasons that people don't achieve a goal or set out to get something accomplished. It's either an ability issue or a willingness issue. Hmm. And those buckets are really big, but no matter what the variable is, it's either an ability or a willingness issue. What I'm never going to let be a problem in the room is I'm willingness thing. We're going to focus on willingness, 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 because it's the only controllable.
Yeah.
The ability is not a controllable because everybody's growth could be done at different rates and their starting points are at different points. So, but everyone in the room could be willing to go through the process and be willing to sacrifice and invest in themselves. So I have to show those things on a daily basis in order to get those things manifested by them.
And I think the other thing that has helped me a lot from when I was a, you know, high schooler is that there are, you always need three kind of people in your life. People that you're looking up to that are your role models. Mm-hmm. There's somebody who's on your level, whether it's your age or insane, that you can bounce ideas back from. And then you always need to have someone who you are mentoring yourself. And we talk about that in the classroom all the time. You might only be in seventh grade, but who's looking up at you right now being a role model? When you realize that, Kyle, there's a kid who, I'm a peewee, he's a squirt, he's looking at me. I have to make sure I'm modeling. And so when they see themselves as being a role model or a teacher or a coach, that empowers them to make progress.
You know, I think in terms of developing those throughout the kids too, I think that once that they get to a point to where they follow the standards that are asked of them and they start having those successes, and then they start seeing other people look to them for answers, and they realize they actually have those answers.
Right.
And they start building, now instead of building proficiency skills, they're moving into mastery and leadership skills. I think it just becomes a natural process year over year where people become more invested in the program.
Yeah.
And it becomes a cultural thing, that's the point of creating a culture of athletic development. Those lifestyle habits and behaviors that, you know, we've talked about many times, I have lesson plans that every day these are things we're going to accomplish. But there's always within the lesson plan a message that I know is habit and behavior driven, when I know is lifestyle driven, and I know is going to be supporting academia in the classroom.
Right.
Because we all need to be working together in order to get the best from kids and for kids. We all got to be aligned to make that happen. So I just don't look at like athletic performance and sports And then there's academia over here. I know that if I'm working to bridge those two things together, yeah. because a kid isn't a student and an athlete, they're a student athlete.
Yeah.
And I realize like the importance of both of them. So I think once kids see that I'm advocating for everything that's in their life, I think that they are willing to maybe trust some things that I might say.
Yeah.
Or some things I ask of them.
Yeah,
that's one part I'm going to ask you later about favorite part about being a Spud, but that is one thing I love about Morehead is that we have students, and we have students who are involved in a lot of things, mm-hmm. but the idea behind kids in our buildings here at Horizon East for sure is you're a student at Horizon East, and all of the things that you're a part of make you a part of that mm-hmm. student at Horizon
right.
East. You're not a football player, you're not a hockey player, you're not an orchestra student, you are a student at Horizon right. East, and all of those other things support you being a student.
One thing that we've been doing for several years is at different concerts throughout the course of a year, we'll have a high school kid come back and talk to the fifth graders. And, you know, the Spuds won state hockey on Saturday the 8th. We had a concert Monday the 10th. Mm-hmm. And I asked Tyden Bergeson if he'd come back. So he came back wearing his jersey, state championship medal around his neck. And he was talking to the sixth graders about, you know, his memories from the weekend and so on and so forth. But what I try to bring home to the kids is that, guys, 4 years ago, Tyden was just like you.
Yeah.
He was sitting in this chair giving a concert for his mm-hmm. parents and his grandparents, and now look at what he's accomplishing.
Yeah.
And after the concert, a kid came up, a little sixth grader, and he said, "Hey, Mr. Cole, 4 or 5 years from now, when I'm like him, can you call me back?"
Yeah.
And I love the fact that he was able to get a glimpse of his future for that moment when Tyden was speaking into his life. And,
right.
You know,
but Tyden is very habit and behavior driven too.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's one of those kids that models those kind of, it doesn't matter if it's in hockey, if it's in training, if it's in the yeah. classroom, it's in the hallway. He's a good kid and focuses on being his best in all those areas of his yeah, life.
Right.
And good things happen to people who work like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about the other side of the spectrum then, because you've both been working in this realm, right? Or management leadership. What are things that get in the way of people maintaining good habits? Specifically, let's talk about students, right? So that we're talking to teachers out there or parents, family members who have looked for us now. Like, what are some things that we can notice that might be getting in the way of developing good habits?
Hmm. I kind of feel like, I've told you this before, I have many people in my circle of success, and they all play a role in the outcome. Mm-hmm. And no one's role, generally, when you have a high level outcome, you can't just pull one of those people out and say, we'll still get the high level outcome.
Sure.
Because all outcomes are some of its parts. You pull out a part, you're gonna get a different outcome. I think that it's tough for us to all get aligned, for a parent to be aligned, to a coach to be aligned, for a teacher to be aligned, for a principal to be aligned with a kid. And we all get together and say, what are we trying to accomplish? What is the main thing today for this individual? What are we all trying to do?
Yeah.
I think we all have different viewpoints of what we think is best or appropriate for this kid. And so sometimes we make it more confusing for a kid than it needs to be. There are really no bad kids. There are kids who make poor decisions, but they're just kids. And so when I think, like, can I deal with this kid who might have some difficulties or difficulties adhering to the habits and behaviors, I can absolutely do that. But what generally gets in the way is generally other adults, not because they're trying to get in the way.
Right.
It's that we don't know how to support each other in supporting the best interests of this kid. And so I think sometimes, because I don't know parents and their best wishes, I don't know all the coaches daily, I don't know the teachers, it's tough to be like, hey, let's create a plan, what's best for this kid, and we're all aligned and we're all moving towards the same direction for this kid. When everybody's moving in a different direction, I think it's tough on a kid.
Yeah.
I think it's hard for them to discern, well, so-and-so said this and so-and-so said this and they're both adults, but I don't know, how are they supposed to know what's more appropriate or not appropriate? So I generally do not think kids ever present me an issue. I think some of the adults in their life might be creating some of the variables that make their life generally either more difficult or more confusing, because kids are a sponge. Whatever we pour into the sponge, that's what we're gonna get. Mm. And so I never look at a kid and like, oh, can't get this kid to do this. It's like, I have to find out within myself, either develop a new skill or to figure out what's the root cause of these behaviors and go back to there and not just judge the last transaction that I had with this kid, because that's not the reason why they're struggling today.
Yeah.
It's something else. And I got to do a better job of trying to understand what that is.
And I think communication, right? So with all of those people, you know, in the wheel of success or circle of success for students, If they're unable to communicate with each other effectively,
it's
that's
hard.
Going to be confusing.
It's hard to be aligned with when you don't have the ability to communicate effectively together. And then no one person has all the answers.
Yeah.
But together, we can come up with a pretty good plan that's going to lead to a good outcome to help the kid. So I think a lot of times it's, lack of communication, lack of alignment.
Sure.
And I really never really think it's a kid's issue
right.
if today they're having a problem, if today they're struggling. I really don't think that.
Right.
I think a lot of times something I say to parents and kids all the time is the most important choice you're going to make over here, you know, leaving faith and family out of it, the most important choice you're going to make in this school is who do you hang out with?
Sure.
Who are your friends?
Yeah.
And I often see, you know, there's a kid who I've had fifth through seventh, fifth through eighth grade here, top-notch kid, and then I've kind of followed them at the high school, and they've kind of fallen off, whatever.
Yep.
And off, I would say almost every single time, it's because a kid has started making, he's not involved in activities, which I think is key.
It's a big one. Yep.
And then because that happens, well, then you have a different circle of friends.
Right.
I mean, I got in a little bit of trouble maybe 10, 15 years ago for grading for orchestra, but we didn't have a lot of standards. But my goal, my grade for the kid was, tell me the name of your two best friends. Mm. And if I think they're good role models for you, you'll pass the class. If I think, and I was told quickly, I can't do that. But I told the principal at the time, I think this is
key. Here's why it was appropriate for this individual.
Yeah, like, right. I mean, and obviously the grade didn't matter.
Sure,
and didn't
sure.
follow them. But, you know, if you hang around with poor kids, you're going to make poor choices. And I think that's a... And the other thing is a middle school teacher. One of my colleagues, Doug Neal, I worked with for many years. He used to say, you know, Brian, middle school is the toughest time for most kids.
Yeah,
middle school
is
the toughest time for the kids. And he said, if he ruled the world, he said, we would shut down every middle school in the country. And we go back to an apprentice model where a kid could find an adult, find a community of adults, and they would go and they would just spend time with them. Because what happens in a middle school, there's so much comparing going on. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not like that kid, or I'm supposed to be like everyone else. And I think for a lot of the students that I see, they're comparing where they're at in their life to where other kids are. And so many kids are finding success and that kid isn't finding success. Mm-hmm. And the hope I think we can offer them as parents and teachers and coaches is that at some point you get to turn the page.
Right.
You know, you might be in a tough part of your life, whether it's the family situation or your friend's situation, but you get to start a new chapter, and it might be today, it might be tomorrow, to let them know that this isn't forever. What you're feeling today isn't forever.
Right.
I think like our model in human performance specifically at the high school is a 9-12 model. Mm. So we have freshmen through seniors, male, female, up to 100 plus kids in every class. There's lots of modeling going on, but what we try to focus on is not you modeling after someone, you focusing on your personal growth. And we're gonna celebrate the smallest ninth grade male or female athlete that came from the lowest level start, who has the most amount of growth of anybody in the class.
Yeah. Mm.
That's something to be celebrated. So we try to make it a focus to not focus on the outcomes, but focus on the process and the growth, because it's the only thing that I care about and it's gonna lead you to success is if you are personally growing mentally, physically, mentally, and emotionally. That's all I care about. Mm-hmm. And so don't compare yourself to other points, because you never know if it's ability thing, a willingness thing. All you can do is control you and your willingness to grow and apply the right habits and behaviors to the process. And that's what's going to ultimately make you successful, not this outcome.
Right.
So we try not to, we don't have any like 1,000-pound club, this, that, the other, because if the biggest, strongest person in the room is generally the biggest person who's the oldest and probably always obviously male, and they're going to be the ones to be celebrated if you celebrate outcomes. We don't, none of that's in the weight room. Yeah. We only celebrate growth.
Yeah.
And so it's a place where I like the 9-12 model. I like that kids can realize like, oh, there's 100 kids in this class. It almost looks like the hallway.
Yeah.
And it looks like every level of school that I'm going to ultimately be in. And instead of housing freshmen with freshmen and getting freshman behaviors, I'm housing freshmen with sophomores, juniors, and seniors so they can all see and learn from one another. And one of the, some of the awesomest thing is when a junior or senior learns from a freshman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's where it's like, okay, that's pretty cool, because that's what this was set up for.
Yeah, yeah. Love it.
So we talked about challenge. I'm gonna go back to something you said, Coach Musselman, of finding that balance between challenge and anxiety and maybe teaching students how to face challenge so it doesn't result in anxiety. So that's part of what both of you do. I think of orchestra as a very detail-oriented, you know, everything has to be performed specifically, and if you can't get it, that's stressful. It's challenging, and especially when when, you know, sometimes your mind maybe doesn't connect to your fingers the way that it needs to. Athletic performance is the same way. Sometimes you just can't do it, like you're just physically not there yet. How do you see students who respond successfully to challenges and not let it turn into anxiety? What are the things that they do? What's the mindset that they have? What are the systems they fall back on? What do the supports that they have in place look like? Talk to us about this piece so that our middle school students during this challenging time know how it's hard right now, but what to do to make sure that they can get through without, you know, spiraling.
Well, I think some people think about, you know, your life as like mountaintops and valleys.
Yep.
Lately, I've been thinking more like it's like a railroad track, that whatever challenges you're going, you might be on a bad rail right now, so to speak. But then you look and 2 feet away from you is the good rail. Mm-hmm. And sometimes on a daily, in a class period or a day, you're going back and forth between good stuff in your life and bad stuff in your life. Mm-hmm. They're really close together. The nice part of that analogy is that, you know, if you stand on a railroad track and look backwards, you see how they come together.
Yeah.
And how I needed the good, I needed the bad to make me into that person I am today.
Sure. Yep.
And I let students know, whether it's, you know, family tragedy, personal issues in their life, that it's all going to make you who you are today and
sure.
then and
yep.
tomorrow. So
yep.
to let them know it's not forever.
I think creating opportunities for them to compete and creating opportunities that may be adverse for them, because everyone in the room has different ability levels in the room.
Sure.
So, but when we create an assessment that we say, hey, we're going to do these chin-ups today, some people can really do them, some people really can't. But you do them often enough where you put people in an uncomfortable situation for them as an individual, they learn to realize and create coping skills of, the more often that I do something, the more that I can normalize doing this. And I'm focusing on the process, not the outcome, because the outcome, we're not grading you on, did you do the most in the room? We're grading you on, are you growing?
Right.
Are you participating at a level that's going to manifest growth? That's what you get graded on. And that's what we talk about all the time. So not making it outcome-based when you're asking a kid to perform, but making it process-based and knowing that they can't control the outcome. There are many times in competition where, let's just take a basketball game, the best team doesn't always win. It doesn't matter what the game is, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes you're the best team and you lose. Sometimes you're the worst team and you win, but you look around and go, I know they're better than us, but we got more points at the end of the game and we won. You know, so outcomes, you can't control outcomes. What you can control is your effort, your focus, your willingness. And so if we focus on those things and the growth that comes with it, and we don't focus on the outcomes, I think it gives people a little less anxiety to go ahead and participate in
right.
something. And the more they do it, the more they do it, the more they do it, the more that they normalize that process and just get better at it.
What I think I heard you say is you almost intentionally create challenging environments to practice the skills of overcoming them, so that kids then can look back mm-hmm. and say like, hey, that was hard, but mm-hmm. I got through it and I knew what to do now.
Everybody's different. So if there's 5 different assessments that we do every other week, so 2 1 week, 3 the next week, and we do them very regularly. And they're not strength assessments. They're not max strength assessments yeah. like a bench or deadlift squat. It's clean. It's not that. It's body weight, relative strength type stuff, explosive movement type stuff, a jump. Those types of things. Everybody can do them, whether it's a time shuttle, whether
sure.
it's a 10-yard fly, those types of things. Everybody in the room has different abilities. So I can't necessarily manifest specifically for you something that makes you feel anxious, but something that we're gonna do is gonna make somebody
right.
feel anxious.
Right.
You know, and you look around the room and you kind of see it. We call it performance anxiety.
Yep.
So I'm trying to create for student athletes in the room a little bit of performance anxiety for them to normalize when that actually comes up in a competitive sense in their sport.
Sure.
They're like, hey, you know what? I can go to this coping mechanism that I use in class and just focus on the process of what it takes to actually make the shot as opposed to the outcome if I make it or miss it. And when they do those types of things, it probably sets them up in a better position when they're in a competitive environment to have a good outcome.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So you guys are both parts of massive programs in Moorhead. Orchestra, specifically at the middle school, it's huge. It is a huge, huge program with a ton of kids, and you've created a culture of performers who are invested in orchestra. Human Performance is the same thing. It's a massive program at the high school. It's made its way to the middle school in our PE environment. So can you talk to me about how, as maybe the leaders of these programs, what you do to set expectations for students, and how did you create a setting where kids feel like they're part of something that's bigger than just themselves? They're a part of something when they're in orchestra.
Mm.
Cole, I'll let you start.
I think next year we have about 700 kids sign up for orchestra here, fifth through eighth grade. And I used to think a lot about numbers. I don't anymore. I remember when our daughters were younger and going through different programs, I never was too concerned about the quality of the program they were going into. I was more concerned, like, what was my daughter's experience going to be in that program?
Sure.
I think at its root level, the word culture really comes down to care. Like, do you feel cared for in the school, in the business, in your city? Like, what's the culture? What's the care? And I wouldn't say it's a secret, but one thing I try to do every day when the kids come into the classroom, I watch them walk in. And I think, now, if I go up to this kid, what question am I going to ask this kid? What do they do this weekend? Like, do I know that they had a tournament this weekend? Do I know that they just got a new puppy? Yeah. And so I think for those kids to know that whether we have 770 or 700 kids, it doesn't really matter how many kids. I care that you, that one person, I have the privilege of working with you today, this week, this semester, whatever. And so ultimately, it comes down to the individual kid's experience in the classroom. And our definition of success is doing your best.
Yeah.
And whether that means you're going to play the solo, you're going to play the loudest and the fastest, I'm not concerned about that. Are you doing your best today when you sit in here? And then, you know, when you go to math, are you doing your best there? And when you go outside after school, you're going to do your best out there. So I think they know that we care about them. You know, kids don't care what you know unless they know you care.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's what we try to create every time a kid comes in. And I have to remember, you know, teaching 30 plus years, how many times have I taught a bow hold?
Yeah.
You know, I've done this, you know, I probably can do it in my sleep. But for those kids who are coming, this is their very first experience.
Right.
I have to be just as excited teaching them year 30 as I was year 3. And it's new to them. And so I think that's when I understood that culture means care. Well, you can always care more than you did yesterday. And that ultimately, I think, helps build any program.
Coach Musselman, same question to you. What do you... You know, kids feel like they belong as a part of the athletic performance community. Here at Horizon, we call it the competitive FIAT environment or the recreational FIAT environment. How do you generate that?
I'm not going to go into the nuts and bolts. I'm going to pivot a little bit from what Coach Cole was talking about and say, first, it starts with the vision. And I look at in the vision, like, I'm a unique opportunity to work for Sanford Sports Performance, which is its own organization, to also have responsibilities to Sanford Health and to also have responsibilities to Moorhead. So I look at these three organizations, and nobody's ever told me this. I think I have to create value for all three organizations. That's
sure.
That's what's in my head. And so in doing that, when I create a vision of athletic development and culture within a community, I have to think who's involved in that. So I have sport coaches at both campuses, Horizon and High School, teachers in the FIAT department at both campuses, administrators at each campus, all the parents. I look at everyone that's kind of in this circle of success, and I'm like, I want to create a vision for them that they all say has value. Then I want to create a role for them. And once I create a role for them and they have some kind of investment in the outcome, then it becomes this thing for a kid that's in the class, which is the final stage, that, hey, their administrators are talking about it, their teachers are talking about it, their parents are talking about it, their coaches are talking about it. And it's done at both campuses from the 8th to 12th grade, and it's like, well, it just becomes a norm and we're all doing this.
Right.
And so that's how kind of culture, that's the back end starting from the top down. And I think if we talk about habits and behaviors, I'll speak from maybe the bottom up, which would be being in front of the kids. But I thought I'd just go a little bit different direction.
Oh, yeah.
But I think creating that culture is, if you don't have a vision that's valuable, it's tough to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you create a vision that people value and then you create a role for them in that vision, to help them get you to that outcome and help all of us accomplish the outcome, then I think it becomes like, hey, we're all invested in this. We're all sacrificing in this. And then outside of me being there, things are still going to be this culture of athletic development.
Yeah.
That's what culture is. I think when I think culture, it's not, I think you mentioned this before in one of our talks, it's not based on me. Mm. It's based on everybody around me fulfilling their role in the outcome, even if I'm not there or I happen to be present. So that's kind of the way I look at it.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, you both have said it, like, after we're all gone from Horizon, does orchestra look the same? Does human performance look the same?
That's the goal. I mean, that's the goal, is that when I'm gone,
it's there.
People value the same healthy lifestyle and they value the same processes and they just keep it going because it works.
Yeah.
In my office, I have, and I got this idea from someone else, they said, find a picture of a teacher who is in your school before you were there. So I have a picture of a lady who's taught back in the 1950s. She's on the very far left-hand corner of my desk. And then, you know, your grad announces, I've got some students who just graduated, and they're on the right-hand side of my desk. And I'm sitting right in between them. Mm-hmm. And I think I don't have to be the A to Z person for orchestra. Mm-hmm. There is someone who came before me, and there's someone who's going to come after me. And my job, like a family heirloom, is, you know, I take possession of it for a while. I try to enhance it, repair it, you know, fix it, maintain it, and then get ready to pass it on to the next person. And realizing we don't have to be the A to Z person, that we can just find, okay, I've been blessed with this opportunity to be in Moorhead for 30 years. I'm going to make the best of my time, and I can't wait to see what the next inheritor of this is going to do with it.
We rarely create any of the steps to play a musical instrument or the movement patterns to get stronger or faster. We just look at those things and we say, how do we apply them? And how do we apply them appropriately to where someone will want to intentionally go about doing them? Mm-hmm. So to me, it's like, none of us made up anything. Somebody did it before us. Yeah. We take our life experiences of everything that we've learned and we look at our current variables and say, how do I apply all these things to help me get the outcomes within the parameters that I'm in now?
That's
so
right.
You make a great point. We rarely create much. There's so many that came before us, and we're just kind of taking that information and applying to our current variables to try to get a good outcome.
Yeah. Right.
And you guys are going to speak at our activity showcase. And so we've talked a lot about things that you probably will either cover a little bit, you'll touch on again during that conversation at that keynote. But I also think it's important to know you guys will go a little more in depth and maybe talk specifically about some habits and behaviors of successful students and specifically what kids can do right off the beginning of the year to ensure that they're off to a good start to the school year. So we're looking forward to that. Again, that's September 4th at our activity showcase. We're looking forward to that conversation. All right, so we're going to hit you guys with some rapid-fire questions. Just kind of a fun way to end, make sure that people know who you are outside of the teacher, the coach, the role that you play in the building. So I'm going to start this one with you, Coach Musselman. Favorite song, and it's phrased here as warm-up or pump-up song, but let's just go favorite song.
So I'm very happy that you did this, because the reality of it is, I hate to say this, I've never bought a CD or a cassette tape or an album in my whole life.
Wow.
I listen to music around the clock. Mm. I literally could not tell you, hardly, unless maybe it's Journey or some random things where I could be like, oh, this is the band and I think that's the name of the song. But I follow all genres of music. But to me, like a favorite pump-up song would be like something that's hard-hitting, something that just creates... for me to tell you the name of the song and who sings it, I don't know. Yeah. I always say the best song in the history of the world is AC/DC's Back in Black.
Yeah.
But then I might say that about something else, too. Yeah. I don't know. But I don't know too much music by name of band and name of song. But if you play it on the radio, I'll be like, yeah, I can sing that song. I have no idea who.
Wow.
No clue. Don't have one.
There's an app for that. I can help.
Is there really?
Some music appreciation classes.
Yeah, I need it. I totally need it. And I feel like I'm cultured because I listen to all genres. But yet I can't recite any of them, so, no clue.
Yeah.
Anything that's hard-hitting, anything that just brings, some kind of, energy up, I love that stuff. And there's a lot of it, and it's in almost in every genre.
Yeah.
Right.
Cool, what do you got?
Probably Viva La Vida. I don't know. Oh, I like the rhythm, Coldplay, yeah.
Okay. You guys played that?
We have, yeah.
That was a good one. That was one where the kids were looking like...
Bowing together, there you go.
All right, hit me with one. You got one word only. Muscleman, I'm holding you. You got one word. Cole, we're going to start with you because I'm what you think. One word to describe your teaching or coaching style.
Energy.
Consistent.
Good. Best advice, and see if we can limit it to a quote, whether you've been read or it's been spoken to you. Best advice that you've been given by one of those individuals. You got your mentor, you got your colleague, and you got your mentee. Best advice you've been given by a mentor.
Don't try to be everything for everybody. Keep the main thing the main thing.
Okay. Title of a book that one of my colleagues recommended, Be Where Your Feet Are. Where you are, that's what matters.
Good. Best part about being a spud, and I'm going to start with you, Musselman, because you're a new spud, newer spud.
I'm going to sum it up real quick. I know I'm too many words, but I just had yesterday, had a female sophomore athlete to play soccer and lacrosse. She was 5 minutes late to 12:30 workout, and she walked in. She's like, Coach, I'm sorry I'm late. And I'm like, oh, why are you late? She's like, well, I had to mow my mom's lawn, or I had to mow my parents' lawn and my grandparents' lawn. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, oh, so you on one of those riding mowers driving around? She's like, no, Coach, it's a push mower. And I'm like, oh, a push mower that's self-propelled? She's like, Coach, a push mower. And I'm like, okay, this is Midwest. But then I left a little bit later into that, and I see the mower in the back of her truck. And this is what I love about where I'm at. Yeah. Because people work hard. They're not afraid of it. They take pride in it. And it's just like, it's something that I'm all about, is being productive throughout the day, as many days in a row, all day long, and as many days in a row as I can. And when I'm around that, it's invigorating for me. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of great kids that are like that.
It is it is contagious too.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is I think the opposite is true too, where if you're laid back and lazy, that can be contagious. But I think the opposite is true here. I second that wholeheartedly. Coach Cole, what do you got? You've been spud for a long time.
Long time. What's the question again?
What's your favorite part about being a spud?
Well, I mean, I love the phrase, once a spud, always a spud.
That's a good one,
and,
too.
One of my passions, my side hobbies, is do spud history. And I've been fortunate to meet spuds or families of spuds all the way back to the early 1900s. They bring in artifacts and memorabilia, their stories. And, you know, at one point, those people were new to town, and now they've been, you know, here four or five generations. Mm-hmm. And I see some of our new spuds coming into town. Maybe they're going to be some of the first kids to ever finish middle school or high school. Now they're the kind of the new crop, so to speak. And I can't imagine what's their life going to be like. Like, where are they going to be four or five generations from now? So once a spud, always a spud.
Can I retrace this, even though that was a good one?
Yes.
Can I go back to it?
Yep.
Retract it, I should say.
Yes, so you want me to cut
I do love that. I do love what Cole just said in terms of the history. You know, I grew up in Las Vegas. I moved there in 74, and it only was established in the 50s. Mm. I went to Arizona, and to areas of Arizona where I raised my family that were all brand new.
Sure, yeah.
So there's no generation coming here. I'm like enamored with when you talk to anybody, when I visited before I took the job. And one of the questions I'd say is, how long have you been here? Someone would say, this long. And I'd be like, okay, what about your parents? Oh, they're here. And my grandparents. And I'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
So I'm coming from Arizona, and everybody tells me this winter thing is so miserable, and it's an apocalypse, and I don't know what I'm getting into, but nobody leaves.
Yeah.
There has to be value in that.
Yeah.
So that to me is like something I've not experienced in my whole life, instead of coming here, where wherever I live and wherever my feet are is as old as this place is and has this much history and generations of people. And so I love that. It's invigorating.
We came across a document. Chuck Watson was the first hockey coach in Moorhead, started the program in 1964. And he, in about 1968, you know, the program was only 4 years old, he sat down, he said, I'm going to type up a one-page paper on how we started spud hockey. It just came across this a few months ago. And the very last paragraph, two sentences, said, I wonder when Moorhead's going to win the section title for the first time.
Wow.
I wonder when Moorhead's going, the hockey team is going to go to state. And then his last line was, and I wonder when Moorhead's going to bring home a state hockey championship. 1960. Well, he wrote it in the late 60s.
Wow.
I think what I love about that is, here's this guy. We didn't even have a rink, didn't even have a jersey, borrowed him from a minor league team over in Bemidji. But even then, he was still thinking about how great it could be here. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, who knows what that next thing that's starting now,
it's
going to bring people and the community so much pride and joy, is that hockey program.
That's awesome.
That is cool. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you guys coming in. This is good. Again, a little bit of a teaser, and it's maybe more of a tease, and give some good insight into what you guys will speak to on the 4th during the activity showcase. This is a fantastic start. Episode 1 of the Spud Spotlight. Again, we're going to try to turn this into a podcast that I'll get on Apple, I'll get on Spotify, I'll make available and accessible to our community, so we can continue to celebrate community contribution, past, present, and future here at Moorhead. So appreciate you guys doing this. This was great.
Yeah, appreciate the opportunity.
You did a great job, Corey.
Yeah.
Great job.